Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, November 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Here it is, our last Vox Pop gardening show for 2025. We welcome back the Dream Team, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. Okay, if you have a gardening question, this is your chance. Otherwise, you won't get one until a couple months at least. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gardening, the last one for 25. We'll kick it off after the news. Why, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are back one more time here in 2025 to take your gardening questions. If you have one, now's your chance. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Bob Graves is here from Fadigan's Nursery in Latham. Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch in Steventown. You can email, too. We already have a stack of emails, but go for it. It's always first come, first serve. 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Hello, gardeners. How are we doing?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Great. Winter is upon us.
It sure is.
It did feel like winter the other night. I went outside on the deck, and I was like, wow.
They said it was going to snow, and I thought, a little dusting, and then a little bit more than a dusting.
Yeah. Bit more than a dusting, and boy, the temperatures a couple of nights ago was like in the 20s. I was like, wow, it actually feels like middle of winter.
We just blew out our irrigation today, and I was afraid that we were going to have trouble that it would be frozen, but it thawed out overnight.
Yeah, we winterized all our lines at the Arboretum, too.
Same thing. 41 hours below freezing.
Wow. Steventown.
Boy, it's cold there.
Before we get started, I just want to thank all of you. You know, this gang doesn't get paid, and they come and do a great service twice a month for the warm weather months. And so I figured since you're not making a great deal, we ought to take next month off, and then we'll do one in late January or something like that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of someone who makes no money, Susie Checkeye, screening the calls 10 years today.
Wow.
She's been screening the calls 10 years. Susie, thank you very much for all you've done. Okay, you ready? Here we go. This email came in a while back, like 5 in the morning. Hello, wise gardeners. All right. The bar is high now, so don't screw this one up. I have about a dozen Fragaria vesca, alpine strawberry plants in a raised bed. Most of the leaves are still green and have a few flowers, despite several days, maybe in the 20s and 30s, some light snow. I'd like to cut them back and mulch with straw. Can I do so now? I don't want to have them waste energy trying to sprout new leaves if we have a warm spell again. I am in Z6A, northeastern Pennsylvania, and that's from Mariana in Lackawaxen, PA.
Yeah, I would actually wait until late November because those are actually still sending, those green leaves are sending carbohydrates down to the roots. And you don't really need to worry about mulching till you have 3 to 5 consecutive nights at like 25 degrees or colder.
Which almost happened.
Almost happened,
but I bet not in northeast
not
Pennsylvania.
Not down there. No.
True.
Yes.
It's also cutting them back is really not something you should have to do.
No, not at all. We never bother.
Yeah, they'll just lay flat and, you know, actually be green until spring. They could, you know, especially
they really are
snow
producing
color.
Some carbohydrate for quite a long time.
Yeah, and one of the best ways to tell when they're fully dormant is those leaves will be fully flat.
Flat.
Yeah, flat, flat, flat. We're actually still harvesting strawberries.
Oh, wow. You're kidding me.
In an unheated greenhouse.
Wow.
So these plants just keep going. And there's no need to cut them back. And I don't like to cover anything up until like the weekend after Thanksgiving. And in Pennsylvania, probably more mid-December or so.
So you said you had 41 straight hours of below freezing?
Outside. Yep.
That's, I mean, how warm is it in an unheated greenhouse?
So yesterday when it was 30, when it was 28 degrees and snowing in a blizzard, it was 46 degrees in our unheated greenhouses.
Oh, so not too bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't do nothing supplementary in the evening with them, right?
No, well, the one heated greenhouse that we have, tomorrow night, we're supposed to go down to about 21.
So you will put a little...
And so I just set the thermostat at 33 degrees, okay. Just so things don't freeze. But it hasn't turned on yet because the moisture level is so high. We have really high humidities, which means you have a high dew point. So the temperature cannot fall below the dew point.
Okay.
So we haven't had anything go below freezing in the tunnels inside. Yet. So we're harvesting tomatoes and peppers.
Incredible.
And beautiful. All sorts of stuff.
All right, this is from Betty in Wilbraham. I love the garden show, says Betty. My questions are, how can I prevent moles and voles from eating my potatoes? And I planted potatoes in two different spots. Voles and moles got one patch, but the other line just didn't produce. Can you give me some tips on the best ways to plant potatoes?
Yep. So the moles, they don't actually eat any kind of vegetable. So they're just eating grubs, worms, and things like that. So voles are the critters.
These are the voles.
Yep. And, we keep, advocating for like mouse traps in either plastic tubes or half containers of like flower pots and stuff.
Yeah.
And just kind of, so other critters don't get them. Baited up with like peanut butter. Classic for like a mouse.
Yeah.
And then where are the voles coming from? They've got a nice little hiding place somewhere that's probably fairly close to that bed. So removing anything that, the compost bin, some old leaves in the corner, making it so that they have to travel much farther to get to the potatoes. And then if you really want to get carried away, you also could sort of fence them with a little hardware cloth.
They really like to be in stone walls and underneath patio block and around where anything that solid that they can get under. We've got a stone wall out front, and it's just amazing. Yeah. It's like a hotel for the voles.
Yeah, it makes sense. And this is, it brings up a good point because voles, this is the time of year to protect your trees too. It's not just potatoes. It's, they're after all, they'll girdle trees. We would get more losses from voles girdling trees than probably any other critter if we didn't protect them. And we do it just like what you said, a little hardware cloth, or a little collar around
Much
each
worse
of these.
Than the deer.
Worse, the worst thing they do is scrape from time to time to time. But the hardware cloth works well.
All right. Usually we don't take a call until after the break. But I have an email here from Gina in the 914. And it said, the subject heading is Crepe Myrtle and My Dead Mother. And it says, and she says, need to call this in because it's a long story. All right, I'm going to go to Gina right now in Rhinebeck. And you have 3.5 minutes. I got to find out what's going on with your dead mother.
How lucky am I that the gardeners are on today? I drove out to the Midwest to visit my 94-year-old mother. We had the best 2 weeks. We did something fun every day. A friend gave her the most beautiful start to a crepe myrtle, and she and I both loved crepe myrtle. She ended up dying while I was there. I'm innocent. I had nothing to do with it. But I brought the crepe myrtle start back with me to try to keep alive. So the pressure's on. I've got it in a little container of beautiful Iowa dirt. We're from Keokuk, Iowa, which is slightly warmer than here, but kind of the same zone now. But I've never seen crepe myrtle out in Rhinebeck, and it's beautiful. How do I overwinter it? Do I put it in the ground now? Do I try to, what do I do with it to keep it alive with a lot of pressure on me?
Definitely some kind. I think planting it now is certainly a good thing to consider. And then, mulching the area well and then building a simple screen around the plant. So this would be, four stakes and maybe some material like burlap that's going to keep any consistent winds off of it. So that desiccation is what you're trying to do. trying to save it from. The alternative would be to wait until spring and store it in the container you have dormant in another protected spot, like an enclosed garage would work.
Not knowing what variety it is, crepe myrtle in this area is pretty marginal. Up in this Albany area, Rhinebeck's a little warmer, but, you know, there are varieties that simply will not grow this far north. There's some that are possible in a protected spot, but it may or may not survive the next winter.
Yeah, it is marginal. It's like just what you said. There are some varieties that could push zone 6, but a lot of them are zone 7.
Yeah. You see them down south, and people come back and want them.
So, you know, getting it to acclimate to the site for a few winters, so that extra protection that Bob had mentioned about, like, you know, or Greg had mentioned about putting a little screen around it and some burlap to protect it against the winter winds. The first few years, it's more vulnerable because it's from a warmer zone. And, you know, we have a lot of trees at the Arboretum that have, I would say, that are outside of their hardiness zone, almost over 40 that are, hardy to zone 6 or warmer. And a lot of them have lived since the 50s. And the way that they lived was they were started really, really small, and they got acclimated to the site. And then, microclimates within your site. I don't know, you know, your yard. Every yard's got a little bit of a warmer pocket, a little bit sheltered zone.
Okay.
And other parts of the property generally are a little windier, a little more exposed. You would want to, you know, utilize the more sheltered locations. So, you know, no wind in this area. Protected little cove next to some, maybe sometimes even next to a building, because the building will reflect a little extra warmth. That would, you know, probably be your best bet.
And maybe facing which direction would that be?
East is ideal, so that the prevailing east winds are
on the east side of the house.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. That would be perfect.
All right, Gina, we're going to have to leave it there, but I'm glad you got
back in the spring.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough. Good. Thanks for the call. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gardening. The gang is here. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's the Gardening Show, last one for 25, with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. Couple more emails, and then we'll jump back to the phones in earnest here. This one's from Stanley. On our yellow delicious tree, the apples are covered with a black sooty substance that is hard to wash off. Is there an organic spray that would solve the problem?
Sounds like black sooty mold, and there should be a number of different
sulfur
options.
Would be a possibility for that.
If it's coming off, then it's sooty mold. But it also could just be that, you know, the remnants of that black spot can be on the
fruit. Mine, I couldn't wipe it off of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It might also be fly speck, which is another fungal disease.
So the best thing would be fungicide treatments prior.
Yes,
before
absolutely.
You see all fungicides have to be applied before you see the problem, because they are preventatives. They are not eradicants. So something like a sulfur or a copper, some organic form.
Yeah, but if it is a sooty mold, it would wipe off. You would be able to clean it off. So that's kind of the test, I guess. If you can't clean it off.
I doubt that it is.
I would also don't think it is, because, I mean, that would mean what? That it's loaded with aphids or something, right?
Sooty mold grows on the frass.
Right. It's not going to just pop up on the apple. So I tend to think it's more fungal as well.
I think it's fungal.
Yeah. The other, like I said, it might be fly speck. If you go to your cooperative extension, there's lots of resources out there for home garden spray schedules, and it'll list the different diseases and give you materials that you can use.
This one's from Fred, and then we'll go to the phones for a bit. Fred has two questions, if possible. Normally, I get a couple of quarts of autumn raspberries from my plants. This year has been amazing. I've picked many gallons of raspberries, and they have been plump and exceptionally tasty. What was right about this year's weather, and what can I do in future years to repeat this wonder? That's question one.
Yeah, well, it has been a great year. We're actually still also picking raspberries from our high tunnel. And lots of sun, which you don't have any control over. But the other thing is lots of water and making sure those plants have good nutrition through the summer. And you will get a long, bountiful harvest.
It's really that water early in the season really got them going.
Probably helped them a lot.
Yeah, although, you know, you've got to make sure you've got water after those fruit have formed.
Sure do. Absolutely.
And, and it's great to hear that there were so many because it was so dry during July and August.
There must have been watering them some in order to get that many.
That's what I'm wondering, too. Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, drought has an advantage, and that you could, especially if you have no shortages of water, you control the water now, and that prevents you from getting fungal issues, overhead irrigation. It's nice to be able to apply that.
All right, second question. I have some Brussels sprouts that are still immature. Can they overwinter and produce in the spring, or should I just pull them out?
I would let them go for a while longer. They probably won't size up a whole lot, but
They'll taste better.
To me, the Brussels sprouts taste better when they've had some colder weather. So you can kind of store them in the field for a while. And once it starts going down below 20 degrees on a regular basis, I would get them out of there, but they're not going to get a lot bigger.
All right, let's go to our phone lines. It's The Gardening Show with Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. And we go now to Kerry in Plainville. Kerry, you're on.
Hello, Ray and your guests. I have a rosemary question. I got some very healthy rosemary growing outside. And now the question is, would it be advisable to pot them and bring them inside for the winter? And if I do that, is there any special care that they should have?
I would definitely bring them in for the winter. Rosemary doesn't tend to overwinter in this area very well. Yep. And I would do that pretty soon just so that you don't lose them in a super cold night. The main thing with rosemary is it getting powdery mildew inside during the winter. So make sure that it doesn't get overwatered. Let it go kind of semi-dormant in the low light conditions. And don't be overwatering it during the winter.
We've also put a little fan in by them so it gets some air circulation, so you minimize that. Just take a little bitty fan to create some airflow.
Yep. That makes sense.
I usually do the same thing, pop it out of the garden and put it in a pot every year. And I actually put it on a back entry way that is unheated but very sunny. And so it's still getting, you know, in the 30s easily, even when it's, you know, 18, 19 degrees out there.
Right.
But by keeping it dormant, it's sort of like mimicking, you know, where it could winter over, sort of Virginia or southern New Jersey.
That's the hard part about bringing something inside is you put it in a sunny spot. But in this part of the world, in the wintertime, there is no sunny spot. It's cloudy all the time and the days are short. So you got to have it in a really sunny spot.
Right.
And you can actually put them in a warm room and put them in a bright spot and get them to grow again. But the powdery mildew is the thing that you'll be battling. So there are some things you can do. If you can do some preventative fungicidal treatments, which would include chamomile tea or milk and water, or a compost tea, but I think the chamomile tea is really good.
Okay. Kerry, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Bonnie wrote in, poor Gina. Is anyone going to offer condolences? R.I.P. Gina's mother.
Absolutely.
Sorry. Everybody, we're all sorry. All right, let's move on and just turn another page. We'll go to Glenn, New York. Stefan, you're on. Very noisy connection, buddy.
Hello,
are you skydiving, sir?
No, I'm driving in a car.
Okay.
You are on my speaker.
Aha. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you ask the question and then listen on the radio? It's very noisy, okay?
Okay, fine. I have two questions, if possible. The first one is, I have some tender.
Some what?
That I would like to open them up and grow, and I'd like to know when's the best time to put them in the ground and how to do it. And the second question is, I need help with my watermelon and pumpkin plants.
Okay, we got the watermelon and pumpkin plants, but we missed the noun in your first question. What is the problem?
The first one is, I have contender peach pits.
Okay.
I'd like to grow them.
Okay. All right, so we're going to let you go. You listen on the radio, it'll pop up in about 15 seconds. All right, gang, what do you think?
Well, contender is a selection of peach, and I can't say that you'll get a contender from that peach pit, but you will get a peach.
Yep. Right. Yep. A lot of those cultivars don't come true from seed, so that's often the case. You'll get a peach. Will it be a contender? odds are against it.
You really don't know what you're going to get.
Nope, but Contender is a good variety. It will do good in our zone.
And you could go back to the Contender tree and take a cutting and graft it to another peach tree if you have one. Or I'm not sure what the rootstock is on peaches.
It's going to be a long time before you get any fruit off of that.
Or you could probably find one at a place that sells those kinds of things in a 5 or 6 foot size in the spring.
There you go.
Yeah, and in the spring, it's quite common. Like this time of year, finding the varieties are trickier. But in the spring, you can often get them in the smaller sizes. So if you don't really want to put a 5 foot tree in, if you call nurseries, they generally can, we're going to get these in. You might be able to order ahead of time, and that'll kind of guarantee that you can get something. You might be able to get a bare root, too.
If you want to get a bare root in the spring, is the time to do it. Yep. You can get it shipped and get a smaller plant shipped that time. You can't get it after the season starts. You can't ship that stuff.
Right. But a bare root would work real well, and their bare roots are a lot cheaper. You get more tree for your money.
And not to tangent too much, I know we have some fruit questions to answer, but it's not a bad time to plant deciduous things, even some evergreen things right now. This, even though it's cold, this weather is excellent because you can, if you're ready, there's lots to do out there.
Right.
If you're ready, you can be putting things in now and essentially not worrying about them until spring. There's no real follow-up maintenance other than maybe some deer protection.
The hard part's finding it this time of year. If you don't have
it. Yeah, we've been putting a lot of stuff in at the Arboretum. Yeah. It's right on through. But we have it. We have this. We have the material. We're just getting it in the ground.
Ours are gone.
It's nice because you don't have to water it. Just got to winter protect it.
Now, what was the question about watermelons?
So he was asking about help with his watermelons and pumpkins. Not sure what type of help he needs, but in general, they both do really well with a nice, fertile, sunny spot. They need to get full sun. They need to get good nutrition management through the season, which means either irrigating through or fertigating through your irrigation system or getting a good amount of compost down to give long-term nutrition during the summer.
But the season's over, right?
The season is over.
Oh, yeah, we're talking next year.
Right. So pumpkins, you could direct sow if you wanted to, right? If you could, but watermelon, definitely might want to start them early.
Yeah, watermelon is better to plant as a transplant. Pumpkins, I actually prefer to also do as transplants, but you can certainly direct seed them as well. But I think maybe calling back in the spring when you're ready to be seeding these,
They both have a lot of fungal problems, too. They'll get fungus on the leaves depending upon the weather. So.
And the pumpkins especially, yes.
Pumpkins especially.
And on the outside chance, he was talking about starting them from seed because he mentioned the pits of the peach. Those also will not produce true to seed. So if you saved watermelon seeds or pumpkin seeds, it would be better to just buy some, guaranteed source seeds, varieties from a good source. So if that was part of the question, we would not recommend replanting those seeds. We'd recommend you buying seeds in the spring.
On April, one of the April shows would be perfect.
Okay. We'll remember that one for April, perhaps. It's Gardening Today with Greg Ward, Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Dale Eiler Riggs. Let's go back to our phones now, and we'll go to Monticello. Janet, you're on.
Hello. I'd like to know if it's too late to apply Hollytone to some ewes, and if it isn't, when is too late?
Yeah, it's a good time to fertilize this time of year.
Yep, for sure. It's you could definitely still put it down. Hollytone is a great product because it's organic, and it takes a long time to really get into the soil, and it feeds over a long period of time. So definitely putting it down now is good. You could also put it down early spring prior to growth, and that would also work.
There's a lot of root growth that happens before the ground freezes.
There is.
The ground is freezing later and later in this area.
That's true, the way things have been going.
So you've got a lot more time for those roots to do stuff.
All right. Do you want to follow up, Janet?
Nope, that sounds great. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for the call to Hancock, Massachusetts. And Meredith, you're on.
Hi. I have these raspberries that I planted years ago, and so I don't know. They're different varieties. And they did pretty well this summer, but should I trim them back by half? They've got these great canes that make a hoop and go back down into the soil. Should I trim them now? That's my question.
Okay.
Hi, Meredith. It's nice to hear you.
Hello, Gail. How are you?
I'm great. I'm sorry. Were these summer-bearing raspberries or fall-bearing raspberries?
Both. That's the problem. Yeah.
Okay. So I do not recommend pruning back any type of raspberries until December, especially when you don't know exactly what type they are. At that point, you should be able to differentiate your summer-bearing raspberries from your fall-bearing raspberries, because the summer ones will have more brown, truly dead canes, whereas the fall-bearing raspberries should still have some leaves on them right now. And those you don't want to prune back until between December and January. Anything that you know had fruit on it this summer, you can prune those back now if you want to.
Okay, so it sounds like they're all mixed together. I should just wait till January.
Yes, yeah? If it doesn't matter to you which is which, just wait until December or January and cut them all back then. Just have them cut back by early June, March.
But cut them back by half. I'm not cutting them to the ground, right?
Your fall raspberries, you do want to cut to the ground. So that's where, if you can figure out which is which.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's the Gardening Show today. And let's see, an email or two here, and then we'll take a break and then go back to the phones. This one is from Diane in Worcester, New York. Not Mass, says Diane. Now, okay, I've gone by Worcester, New York many times on I-88.
Yep.
And, in fact, during the pandemic and slightly after, that exit was closed. They were doing a lot of work on that particular exit. Does anybody know, is that the way you say it? We know how you say it in Massachusetts, but how do you say it in New York?
Worcester.
Well, I was going to say the same thing, is that you know they're not from Massachusetts if they're saying Worcester.
I know. You say Worcester, which is
Worcester.
Well, listen, I got a Massachusetts guy in the newsroom who says Worcester, and it drives me up the wall. Where's the I? Where's the I?
I don't know. Where's the R when you say it?
I'll give you Worcester, okay? I'll give you that. But all right, anyway, let's get back to the question from Diane. Sorry, Diane, I'm easily distracted. Diane says, I have two questions. A bank near my house that has been taken over by goldenrod. I have plenty of goldenrod in my fields for pollinators. I noticed that sedge has a really dense root system. If I filled the bank with sedge, would it crowd out the goldenrod? That's question one.
First of all, goldenrod is a great thing to have around. Yep. If you have a bank and you want it low maintenance, just cut it all back either now or in the spring and not worry about it. Okay. That said, if you cut the goldenrod in season, so just as it's starting to come up or later in the summer, and there's a lot of sedge already established underneath it, then you probably will do what will happen is just what you want. The sedges will come in, will stay there, and you will sort of wean out the goldenrod. Because goldenrod does not like to get mowed when it's actively growing.
If it's mowed a few times, it's going to go.
It disappears.
Yeah, it's easy to get rid of it.
All right. Question two from Diane. Our library just took down 3 dying 80-foot maples and wants to plant 20 to 40-foot trees. Spring flowers, good for pollinators, low maintenance, some of the interests. Dogwoods, redbud, linden, serviceberry were some we were thinking about. Any recommendations? And that's from, again, Diane in Worcester, New York.
Those are all good
ones. Those varieties sound good. Crab apple is another one that they could throw into the mix. Hawthorn's another one.
Hawthorns and redbuds are really nice early pollinator plants, and as are apples.
Yep.
Mary writes in, so sorry to ask again. I know you've had this so many times. What could be done now to eradicate crabgrass, and what to do in the spring?
It's not really worth trying to get rid of it now. It's dead. It's gone to seed. Into spring, you could put down a pre-emergent crabgrass preventer, which you may need to do twice if you really want to get rid of it.
Okay.
Or you could overseed now with some perennial rye, trying to crowd out the crabgrass and fertilize now so that your good grass can outcompete the crabgrass.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'll tell you what, Zach the engineer, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Gardening Show, last one for 2025. Fear not, they'll all be back soon enough. ¶¶ J.J. Johnson, Kai Winding, and oh yeah, A Night in Tunisia here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Final gardening show of 2025 with Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Dale Isla Riggs from Steventown, New York, the lovely old berry patch, don't you know? Hey, Bob Graves, what do you got going on over at Fadigan's?
Well, we're in the middle of construction. We're building a new greenhouse for spring.
Yeah? Oh, nice.
And pretty soon we're going to be putting up Christmas trees and the wreaths and the greens. And it's,
You know, the big box stores have you beaten by about a month.
You know, it's funny. I'm sure you have it in your store too, Greg. People come in and complain about Christmas being out early, and then they go and buy some of it.
I saw literally in the big box stores it was Halloween on one aisle and
Christmas on the other, so they can just push it over.
Right, like, literally, like same time.
All right. What about you there, Mr. Greg Ward? How are things going at Ward's Nursery?
Sort of. We're not building a new greenhouse, but you know, we do offer sort of an interior inside sort of Christmas shop, and I think it's looking pretty nice right now. Setting up our other greenhouse, which often has, you know, normally has annuals and some tropicals in it waiting for those holiday plants. Some are already arriving, that poinsettia, of course, being the dominant one.
Right.
We are still, you know, we have not quite put away all of our woody plants. You know, winterberry can look really fun right now in a container or as a cut branch. So we have, you know, lots of that kind of thing still available. But we're just about there. This weather is starting to coax us into that. But, you know, it's still not too late to plant some garlic. We're running low on that. But it's still daffodils, things like that. Those items, tulips, crocus, all can get planted right now.
I'm glad you brought up daffodils because John wrote in and John says, too late to plant some spring bulbs. Daffodils, for example, I'm in New Baltimore near the Hudson, so a bit warmer, zone 6A.
Yeah, it's not too late until you can't dig in the ground. So you could be planting these bulbs as late as January. I wouldn't advise that, of course. I would advise getting it done in November or December at the latest. Mm-hmm. But you can be planting them anytime you can manage to get them in the
ground.
Most
of them need a certain number of weeks of being in the ground to develop their root system. So, you know, even if you could plant in late January or February, it would be a little late to do it because they need the time.
Right.
It's good to do it now, December.
All right. And very quickly, Dale Isla, the berry patch closing up shop soon? Or
probably a couple more weeks. We've got harvesting. We're still doing strawberries, raspberries, some greens, but we're looking forward to vacation here soon.
I think that this was a really great year for strawberries. You brought in some killer strawberries year. I'll tell you what.
For sure.
They're still killer strawberries, even at this time of year.
Fred Breglia, what's happening at the Landis now?
Yep, so we're kind of shutting down, getting things ready for winter. Not the staff, that is. We're still wound up pretty good, but the plants are kind of going into dormancy. And right now, a big part of it is just anything that's young, that's been planted over the last 3, maybe even 4 years, we're doing a lot of effort into winter protection. So Vulgards, we've talked about that. We put on tree wrap for the trees that are more prone to getting scraped with deer.
Yeah.
We put up bigger cages around plants that are going to get their buds all eaten up by deer, like our magnolia collections all fence.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't do that, they would eat all the buds and we wouldn't have very many flowers in the spring. So a lot of winter protection. And we are still planting a few woody plants and putting them in the ground as well.
Nice.
Things that we want to, native plants that we're putting in. We took down a lot of old dead trees this year and we made up for it with a bunch of new ones. So we put a lot of those in and overwintering water lines, et cetera.
Splendid.
And a lot of year-end stuff, too, like getting grants in and wrapping up grants.
Oh, that's fun. Paperwork. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
That's why they pay me the big bucks,
right? The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to our pal Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Ray. It's really great to hear your voice again and always. And hello, gardeners.
Hello,
I had to call in.
Hello, hello.
It's way too many months to go without you if I didn't. I have some easy questions, I think. I'm aggressively controlling a wild grapevine on a back fence, just a wire fence, you know. And I'm encouraging a vine that I think is a good vine to encourage. It's
maybe a Virginia creeper. It's got it's the one with five really big leaves with the jagged edge.
Yes, that sounds like a Virginia creeper, and we like that. It's a cool native and awesome
and
fall
go,
color.
They go reddish.
Yeah, awesome, awesome red fall color. Beautiful, one of my favorites.
Good, good. So I'm doing the right thing there. And now I'm still practicing my container growing abilities. I'm looking for a smallish vine that will be easy to train up a trellis and keep it in a container so that I can, keep it over winter safely. And preferably something that has pretty flowers, or it's a bonus if there's anything edible, you know, leaves or fruit or whatever.
Okay. This would be for inside, Joan?
No, this is going to be for outside. It gets really good morning sunshine. By noontime, it's going to be getting fractured sunshine through some heavy trees.
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind would be a Betty Corning clematis.
Betty Corning.
Okay. As in the Corning estate.
Right. Okay. She was a good customer of ours.
She was a board member for
Corning. Was she
She was a board member for Landis Arboretum for a bunch of years back in the day.
And cool.
She was the one who actually discovered that Betty Corning growing in a yard somewhere, and it was an unknown variety. And what I like about it is it's super pretty. But it's hardy, and it's not aggressive like the sweet autumn clematis can really.
Are you thinking of keeping it in the pot outside over the winter, Joan?
Yes, I am. I'm thinking of overwintering them outside.
So ideally with that, you would like to plant the container and all in the soil to overwinter it. So you bury, dig a hole and bury it, to the top of the container.
Just I got done with the rest. Okay.
Yep, and then in the springtime, you could take it out of the ground, and now it's a containerized plant. But leaving it above ground in the container, I feel you would probably lose it with the winter.
A little tough and disconnected.
Joan, but if you buried it, you'd be good.
I hate to cut it short, Joan, but we have a full bank of calls and only 10 or 12 minutes here to go before we're done for the year. Let's go to Lake George. Kevin, you're on.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. Quick question for you. We bought the property a couple of years back. The previous owner had logged it probably about 8-9 years ago. We have a large bunches of wild, I think, raspberries and blackberries. How often will they come back? Are they good to eat? Do I need to do anything to keep them coming back? Or will they just die out as the forest grows back up around them?
Certainly, they'll be around for a while. Once the forest starts closing in again and they're not getting enough light, they may not die out completely, but you probably won't be getting any fruit off them. And eventually they'll probably just die out.
And a way to maintain that, sort of raspberry meadow would be to occasionally, like maybe every 3 or 4 years, brush hog the area, if you can do that.
Right.
And then the raspberry and blackberries will come up again, and the woody things that were trying to come up will also come up again, but it will take some time.
Really surprised me. I got a big area that I brush hog on a yearly basis, how quickly the trees and the brush come back on that. You got to watch it because it may not be 2 or 3 years. It may get so big at that point that you can't brush hog.
Yeah, we brush hog certain areas like every year. Because there's woodies, especially like black locust. They're relentless. And then other areas, you don't see a real lot. So those we do every 2 or 3 years. But you have to know your
areas.
Depends
on what you,
some stuff will get away from you pretty quickly.
Go ahead.
The other thing is, if you really want to make sure you have raspberries, get some if you've got a lot of land or a bunch of land, get some domestic varieties and plant them where you're actually making sure that you're taking care of them every year, and then you're guaranteed raspberries.
And you'll get more fruit that way, most likely, as well.
Kevin, thanks for the call. Alex in Ellington, Connecticut writes, and I'm wondering what the best method is for storing elephant ear bulbs.
You can keep them. You can store them in the pot. In other words, you can keep them in the container they're in. If you've planted them directly in the garden, though, of course, you would want to lift them. And then you just keep them in your basement, not unlike you would keep a dahlia bulb or a gladiola, which would be, to just keep it cool and dark. Maybe wrap it in some newspaper first and put it in a box. But if you can, at the same time, you could keep it in the pot, in the soil. Usually no water, but if you want to keep it up and in your house and alive and active, then you actually do keep a little tray of water under it.
Okay. Let's go to, I believe it's Mick in Dalton, Massachusetts. Mick, you're on.
Yeah, hey, just a quick question. When it comes to herbs, rosemary and such, can you overwinter these in the house?
Yes. You can do them in pots. The main thing is to make sure there's plenty of airflow because powdery mildew can be a problem on it. And Bob was just mentioning a little bit earlier about setting up a little bit of a fan so that you're keeping them nice and dry to reduce the likelihood of powdery mildew.
And the sunniest spot you've got.
A nice southern exposure, nice bright windows are really the best place for, you know, you could do parsley, you could do thyme, you can do rosemary, all, you know, sage, all of those would be able to grow there.
Yep.
Great. Hey, guys, thank you much.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. To Pine Island, Greg, you're on the gardening show. Go ahead. Greg, you got to listen on the phone here and turn the radio down, my friend. He's going to join us in a moment, Zach, I can tell. Hello, Greg. You've been waiting a while. Oh, for Pete's sake. Yes, turn the radio down, Greg, if you wouldn't mind.
I did. It's off.
Okay, go ahead. You're on.
Real quick, heard you talking about rootstock. I put in a pear. I got it through the mail, bare root. Best-looking bare root. I've been doing this for 40 years. The best-looking. Now, how you can tell a bare root was best-looking, I don't know, but it was the best-looking pear ever. Put it in. Started growing right, like 5 days later, sprouts. I couldn't keep the weed whacker off it. Unfortunately, I girdled it and killed it. Ouch. Saw a sprout coming up. Dang, that looks like a peach. I let it go. Turned out it was a peach. Not only was it a peach, the next year I put on 60 yellow peaches. No blush whatsoever. They were cling peaches. I haven't had a cling since I was a boy.
Wow.
Anyway, this year I bought a damson plum from Tractor Supply. Regrettably, I never wanted to, but I did it. And I brought it home. It died right away because they keep them inside, tied up. They can't water them, and they're breathing from the cold into the warm. Anyway, that turned into a peach now.
Wow.
So that's your rootstock right there. They're using a lot of peaches.
So they're using a lot of peaches.
I don't know if this new one's going to be a cling or not, but just to give you a heads up.
You never know what
great
you're going to get.
I appreciate everything
so
you guys
cool.
are doing.
Cool.
Hey,
thanks,
Greg,
thanks for letting us know that, too. It's pretty cool.
We'll go
pretty
to
cool
Kingston
to know that.
Now. 800-348-2551. But really, we have enough people on the line that you'll never get through. So just, you know, next year. Andrew in Kingston, you're on.
Hi, I'm up in Kingston, and I have some tree peonies that I have to transplant to New Jersey. How do I do that?
Yeah, you can definitely lift those right now and then bring them to New Jersey and plant them. They're very tolerant. So in the soil is a little tuber of herbaceous peony that the stems, those woody stems that are coming out of the ground, are attached to. So you just want to go around it, you know, a foot or so out, loosen up the soil, find that tuber without damaging it.
Yeah.
You don't really need to bring any soil with you. You could, at this point, bare root them and then bring, which would never a bad idea if you're traveling far distances like that. No, don't bring any soil with you.
Okay.
And then plant them and water them in really well. And as we said before, you probably won't have to do much of anything again until spring.
Nope, your timing on that, it's actually pretty good.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot. We have this email. How to winter over a Nishiki willow standard that I got from Fadigan's in a freeze-proof pot?
Well, as we were just saying a little while ago, one of the best things is to put the pot right in the ground.
Okay.
It's a pretty hardy plant, but a pot above ground with soil is going to freeze and thaw. It's also the roots are more exposed to the ambient temperature.
All right.
So you got to get it in the ground to moderate the temperature. Yeah. But, yeah, that'll work.
All right. To Sharon in Del Mar. Sharon, you're on.
Oh, thank you, Ray, and the gardeners for taking my call. My question's about trees. I'm looking for a native tree that would not only provide a good privacy screen, but also would be a source of food for birds. I was looking at junipers. I was wondering if you had any thoughts about them and where I might even find them or if it's too late to even plant. I was looking at the Taylor, the Emerald Sentinel. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, these are all, those are selections of the native red cedar, Juniper virginiana, and they would be great. I think those are perfect. Or any Juniper virginiana would work. There's several other selections, and then there's just the straight species.
What about timing?
As she said, it's difficult to find these items now. So looking around at garden centers and asking if they have any still in stock. Otherwise, definitely you should be able to find them in the spring.
Yep, and do look for the variety, because the variety is determined to height. And you're talking about a screen. If you want it to be full size or you want it to be shorter, kind of a slower growing, there's a lot of different varieties of those junipers out there. So just a little research on the cultivars so that way you don't get something that's bigger than you expected.
All right. Yeah. Sharon, thank you. Let's go to Emily quickly in Shelburne Falls. Emily, go ahead.
Hi there, Ray. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Well, happy almost winter.
Yeah, right.
I just pulled my dahlias out and a week ago or so put my garlic in. And my question is, what can we prune tree-wise at this point, like hydrangeas and bush trees? I missed some of it because I was out there digging.
Oh, boy.
Hydrangeas and, red... I'm sorry.
Hydrangeas, the panicle hydrangea, the one that, bloomed well into the fall and is a tree form kind of plant, you can certainly start to prune that today if you want. You can also wait right into March and early April. You can do it both times. You can sort of take all, deadhead it now lightly and then go back in March or early April and finish it off. So there really is a big window of opportunity for those.
Yep, and then in terms of general trees, oak trees, we really don't recommend pruning any oaks in the growing season because of oak wilt, which is a fungal pathogen. And so the dormant season is the time to do oaks.
Uh-huh.
So if you have oak trees that you've been wanting to prune, this is we're kind of there. And I like to do them even later, December. Almost. But you could definitely get away with it.
The question now is what not to prune, because you can prune an awful lot of stuff.
You can.
Right now.
Yep. So not to prune would bleeders.
That's what I.
Yeah. Yep. Things that bleed, sap flow, like birches, they
maples.
Bleed in the spring. Maples bleed in the spring. In other words, they're sap flow. So those kind of plants, I wait till summer to prune. It wouldn't kill the tree or anything like that. In fact, there's been research that says it doesn't even hurt them that much. But in general, bleeders, we wait till the growing season. So
I
like,
actually
have a
maple in my yard. I'm going to prune.
You can prune it.
Weeks,
right.
Only because I have to.
Yep. Right. And then, like I said, it's been proven not to be overly detrimental, but you'll get that sap flow.
Very quickly, now we only have about 15 seconds. Carol's in Pittsfield. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi, Ray. I just wanted to comment and say I think you were doing fine with the pronunciation of Worcester, New York.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now.
It's Worcester, yes.
Yep. How
my family
do you
was from there. And
how do you
so
say, you're
you
in Massachusetts
it.
Now, how do you say Worcester, Mass? How do you say it?
I don't.
No.
That's wise.
All right. Well, that was very witty indeed. Thank you for that one. All right. So, Bob Graves, quickly, how do we find Fatigan's?
Fatigan's, we're on the Troy Schenectady Road, Route 7, 2.5 miles west of the Northway near the Airport Road.
Greg Ward.
Yeah, Ward's Nursery is at 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
And Dale Isla, even though you're going to be on vacation soon, we might as well say it.
TheBerryPatch.net, and we'll have berries up until Thanksgiving.
Splendid. And Fred Breglia, the Landis.
Yeah, we're at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York. Website is landisarboretum.org. We are open year-round, dawn to dusk, free of charge.
All right, now support comes from the Octavo Singers and Octavo Orchestra, presenting Haydn's Mass in Troubled Times and Bernstein's Chichester Psalms, Saturday, November 15th, 3 p.m., octavosingers.org for location. Thanks again for the great work this year from Fred, Bob, Greg, and Dale Isla. Thank you for joining us. Sorry if we didn't get to your question. It won't be that long and they'll be back. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. 10 years in, Susie Checkeye is still screening the calls. Thanks, Susie. I'm Ray Graff. No more gardening Vox Pops until next year. The Gardeners will be back for a midwinter edition on January 22nd, so mark your calendars. Meantime, tomorrow it's Food Friday. Pies! Ellen Gray, pies. That's all I got to say.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 105.1 Great Barrington, WWES HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANZ HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, WQQQ 103.3 Sharon, and WAMC AM 1400 Albany.